let's start with you introducing yourself, your name and your identification, please.
My name's Frank Reeder, and I sing with the Trash Can Sinatras.
I recognize you. This is good. This is a good start. How does it feel, Frank, to be in a band that's been together for close to 20 years, and yet you're here at South by Southwest, the bands that haven't even been together too?
Yeah, that is a kind of strange one, yeah. I mean, a lot of the time you have to sort of, when you meet these bands, I find myself trying to stop myself from, you know, the back in my day kind of thing, you know. So, but I think that's just part of growing old anyway.
You don't want to put your arms around and say, okay, listen, son, let me explain that you don't have to pound the drums that hard to get a beat.
No, we don't have to go that far. No, I don't think they would listen to us anyway, you know. going by the way I was then. I don't know, it kind of started off for us. It was a little bit like No One Gets Out Here Alive, you know, when we were touring. It was just very crazy. And I realised that's probably the same way it is for young bands now. We didn't listen to anybody. That's how we managed to stay together, actually. So I certainly wouldn't advise anyone to listen to us. And now our touring and our recording is a little bit more like Pickwick Papers. We're just like a bunch of gentlemanly going around the world, plying our trade, you know. So it's changed a lot, yeah.
I had no idea until I really dug into the bio that you were originally a cover band. What music did you cover?
Well, we did anything that was kind of easy, really, we would do. And you were talking about your show and how it's quite a diverse remit. And we were like that too, because we were always big fans of melody, and country music was always really big in all of our families. Crystal Gales and any kind of like show, which was quite, you know, it was quite brave at the time to be standing up in front of a goth audience and doing that. I mean, Velvet Underground itself in Scotland at that time, or in the small town where we lived, was quite a brave thing to be doing, believe it or not. So, you know, it was a pretty shockingly heavy metal town where we lived. So, yeah, we just did covers like Elvis, Velvet Underground, Orange Juice, and then gradually worked in our own thing, you know, song by song, sneaked them under there. Yeah.
And Crystal Gale, of course, had to finally go away.
She didn't go for away for quite a while, and she was resurrected every now and again, yeah. Not for a long time, though. Not for a long time.
You're scaring me. No, just kidding. Obscurity Knox was actually, and again, you know, reading things, I learned things because, you know, the interesting thing that happens to this day here in America is we wait a long time for some of the music, and you probably perceive that you wait a long time for some of our music. So I wasn't even aware that Obscurity Knox really was the first single, but Only Tongue Will Tell, there I was and listening to the radio, actually, and I was on the radio, but I was listening to the radio and this song came on, and I just said, you know, my goodness, where did this come from? And it really, at the time, considering when it came out, it's exactly what you were describing. It was a very, very melodic piece of music, and a mellow piece of music, and a pretty piece of music in a time when there was a lot of noisy rock and roll going on. A lot of noisy rock and roll. So it really broke a mold.
Well, I don't think we were really aware of that, of course. I think most people, when they write music, they're just kind of really try, especially in a band, you're really trying to kind of get it through your own filtering process, you know, the five of us had created. And we weren't really aware of breaking any molds. As soon as the record was released, it was kind of like we were blinded by the light, you know, as the doors opened, you know, we realized that we were kind of out of time then, you know. So I know exactly what you mean. We've never really had great timing as far as all that goes. And I think maybe now, in fact, it's probably the closest to it. This is probably the most receptive, generally. Radio.
Well, yeah, melodic rock and roll is back big time.
Yeah, well, I don't know when it was back before now, but certainly no time when we were releasing records.
Yeah, and a great segue, because literally, I'd say exactly a year after Only Tongue Will Tell hit, the melodic rock and roll really was turned on its ear with this thing called grunge and the whole Seattle sound and all of that. So did you consider changing your sound? Because the name would still work. I mean, the Trash Can Sinatras, you could have been from Seattle and it would have worked right next to Nirvana and all of those other ones. But
right.
Did you consider going grunge?
No, but I have imagined like people who like surf around looking for new music happening across their name and thinking, oh, this will be really rocking, you know, and then getting a real shock.
Dude, the Trash Pants Sinatras.
And yeah, they'd be really, really shocked if they heard us. But a lot of what you're saying was happening in America, you know, while we were in the UK, and we weren't really aware of the fact that we'd kind of just slipped in there, you know. We were expecting massive success from the beginning anyway, so everything was a disappointment. So,
Boy. So skipping some years, you know, Go Disc that you were on, which was a wonderful label, kind of went away magically, not in a good way, but as so many record labels do. And then, again, things I discovered, because we're in America and we didn't know it, then you slipped in a cover of To Sir With Love that hit on Radio 1. And I've never, I have to admit, I have never heard it. So I'm going to, A, have to get it for when we do this show, and B, tell me, or maybe you will tell me I shouldn't, and B, tell me what it was like, and, you know, because that was an interesting time, I would imagine, because you did a cover there, and an interesting cover.
Well, it's on one of our albums, so it's on Happy Pocket, which wasn't released in the US.
Which wasn't really, of course, but I'll get it.
Let me see. I think when we were doing it, we were trying to, have you ever heard, well, I'm sure you've heard Going Back by Dusty Springfield.
Mm-hmm, of course.
I think we were trying to put those two together. So we made a kind of, I really love that grand British 60s sound when they were sort of trying to replicate a huge American sound but couldn't quite do it in a sort of glorious attempt at it, which usually ended in failure, you know. But to me, it's a great, great sound, the Ivor Raymond arrangements. So it's a very kind of like atmospheric, big booming drums and all deliberately recorded.
We'll have to get it. It sounds like it's going to fit in great.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a heartbreaker, so we'll see how you react.
I cry every time she sings it in the movie. Every time Lulu sings it, and you know, and he's accepted in the class, and
yeah,
you know, so
yeah. Well, it isn't quite as perky as that. So,
well, it's hard to be as perky as Lulu was. You know, that was her.
Or still is, from what I can see.
Yeah, I know she's still around. It's kind of amazing. So. If we were doing the VH1 or the whatever, you know, the behind the band thing, this would be the moment in the story where we get to that, you know, they do the drum roll and they go to the commercial and they say, next, the Trash Can Sinatras go bankrupt.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The announcer would come on. But, you know, it is a true interesting comeback story, and we don't want to dwell on it too long, but, you know, it's kind of interesting. Again, the lesson to all these young bands here at South by Southwest. Is don't you know, you might have that one song and you might have two songs and you might get really big, but don't let that fool you. You know, things change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite a well trodden path. If they don't know by now, so will they ever? But our sort of downfall was really buying our own studio. So it wasn't it was kind of the opposite to that whole.
It was a business thing more than a.
It wasn't like we were tearing around town, you know, like casinos every night or anything like that. But it was more that we were trying to maintain a sort of. It was a ridiculous burden to take on. We were trying to maintain a studio and rehearsal rooms, and we really couldn't. It wasn't financially viable. Okay, we had one or two. Reasonably sized hits, but records didn't really sell that many, you know. And eventually, you know, all just kind of caved in. In fact, it's quite strange the story of how we finally left the building. These pigeons had started to roost in our loft, and we all lived in the building, and we had separate rooms in the building, and the pigeons started to roost, and we couldn't get rid of them. We tried everything, environmental health, sending cats up there, and eventually we couldn't stand the noise anymore because they were just cooing all night. It was like freaking us out, you know. So eventually we just, after maintaining the place for 8 years, we decided to leave it to the pigeons.
And they made some great rock and roll, I'm sure.
I believe they are. I think they're still together.
I think the Pigeons are a good band. Has anybody taken that? I don't think anybody's taken the Pigeons, because, you know, they are considered the rats of the bird world. So a hard rock band could do some great work with the Pigeons. But now let's just get off that and let's skip today. Melodic rock has you know, it's back, as we were talking about. It's huge, and a lot of it has come from over there. You know, we, in fact, ridiculous. You know, the British invasion here at South by Southwest is just pretty. It's pretty awesome. I was at the BBC show last night, and people were just going crazy. But I really think that, and I can tell you, the number of bands I've interviewed that the name of Trash Can Sinatra, you know, Keen, The Delays, in their list of influences.
Oh, really?
It all magically appears because you did it. Not that you did it early on, because obviously little bands like the Beatles and, you know, and prior to that did it early on, but it's more about that as that generation of bands when they were kids, that's exactly, I'm not saying you're old, Frank, but, you know, you're looking at me and we're both not exactly spring chickens, but it's kind of cool that you really, I think, influenced a lot of that generation that's now suddenly becoming huge, but yet you're back. So that's kind of exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is, and it's really kind of gratifying to know. I'd like to have known this at the time that these people were around, you know. But, yeah, it's really, really gratifying, yeah. I don't think that what we did then was appreciated enough to be quite kind of bullish about it. And I don't know, maybe our dog's having its day now.
Yeah, and you had a lot of songs kind of waiting to be recorded before Weightlifting made its way to the world. So tell me a little bit about how that all happened, because, again, I don't know the European side of things. I only know that magically Spin Art Records called me and said, actually, I got an email, and they said, you wouldn't believe what we've got. We've got the new Trash Can Sinatras, and they're back. You know, they did a whole thing. So tell me a little bit how that all came about.
Well, the album, while we were stuck in that kind of era that we were touched upon, our songwriting continued, but it was kind of bleak. And if you can imagine, like, a band who are not able to release records, we were really desperate to get back. And so we went to America as soon as we had 10 songs of any description. We went to America, to Connecticut, to try and record the album. And that turned out okay, but even by our standards, it was pretty gloomy. And we came back and we regrouped and we decided that, you know, this, as time was moving on, we were actually getting through all this period and becoming more confident, and actually that doing that recording was helping us, you know, it was helping us, because our confidence was kind of shattered, you know, and it was kind of difficult to operate as songwriters in that with that frame of mind. So the next album, the album that we brought out, took the form that it's got right now, because we sat down with these songs and thought, well, that actually reflects last year, and we didn't want to go forward with that and you know, basically sing it for the next 2 years around the world and not really be feeling that way. So we tried to get a little bit more of a balance together and just went into a studio in Glasgow and sat down and, you know, just let the magic gush forth.
There you go. And now the irony, the name of the album could be taken many ways, because Weightlifting, I mean, not only is it, you know, but it really was, you waited a long time, you lifted yourself up. I mean, it really, we could have a long discussion about the true meaning. And then what's the song you put on there? You put your own Welcome Back on there.
Yes. Well, we had a little bit of debate about whether we should have such a brash start to the album, because if you've heard it, you probably know it's quite incongruous, really. But we decided to go with it, and I think it was quite a defiant kind of message that we wanted to put forth, you know.
No, I mean, you came back guns blazing.
And then put the guns away and started.
Yeah, so, I mean, for people who are looking for that, how has your sound changed thing? I don't really think it has to any great extent. You did add Roddy. You do have a new band member.
Roddy's not permanent. He plays keyboards with us when we can get him, but he's not a permanent member. I don't think the sound has changed either.
I don't either, but I know that people, when they were doing the review, you know, all the reviews, they went out of their way to say they're back, and it's kind of like, isn't the real point of a band to progress the sound within the sound that you had in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what we've done. I think we've...
You know, makeover, for most bands who try a makeover,
really?
It really kind of bombs.
Well, I don't think we would do that very well. We're just taking so long to get comfortable in the skin that we've got. You know, I don't want to go out, you know, draping ourselves in something else. You know, exactly. That would be a nightmare.
But now I've read some reviews live, and you're being very generous in that you're peppering in weightlifting, but you're not doing what many a band does, which is, we're here, we know you came to see us to play our hits, and we're going to play our new album, and you're going to stand there and not recognize, you know, it. And if you're really, really lucky, we'll play a couple of the songs you recognize for the encore, but I've read you don't do that.
We have done that, I admit, but we tend to take each gig as it comes. We write set lists 10, 15 minutes before we go on stage, just judging by how we feel at that time. So I think that's the best way to do it. But we've got a kind of whole, I think all those old songs, we're quite well aware of playing to a lot of new, quite a large part of the audience that comes to see us haven't seen us before, because it's been so long since we toured. So I think we're aware that, you know, we want to sort of place ourselves to them. We want to say, you know, this is what we've done as well. You know, we don't really want to just, stand in front of them and say, we're here to promote this. We're actually quite keen in the idea of, you know, placing ourselves in there in history that way, you know. And to be honest, we haven't had a great chance to play throughout the past 7 years. We've played little gigs here and there, but never really built up any momentum. And, you know, the songs are, you know, they're the things that have kept us going, and we love them more than anybody, so we love playing them.
Well, and it shows. So the last fun thing, and this is where the rest of the hour of the show comes, and it's kind of a trademark and it's fun, is I want to make a Trash Can Sinatra's musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs as the bread, and you can pick an old one and a new one, or you could pick two off weightlifting. But then I would love you to put in fillings, music that you've always kind of wanted to hear with your music, and whether that educates people as to the band's sound or just music that you think would be really kind of wonderful to hear in between. And that's what we do, is no matter what you ask me to play, for the rest of that hour after you and I have talked, that's exactly what we're going to play.
I think for us it would be nice to, in this context, to have something from the start and from the middle and from now. So that's the easy part. So I don't know, you can choose from the early stuff, because I'm not the best judge. Something like Obscurity Knox would be good. In the middle, maybe Hay Fever, Hay Fever would be good. And at the end, probably Weightlifting, the song itself.
Terrific.
Right, so in the middle, this is, you're putting on the spot here. It's hard to know whether to think about it in terms of just music that I like. Well, I'm the same as you. You know, I really love melodic music of any description. I'm a massive fan of orchestral 60s pop, things like Teenage Opera. I don't know if you're aware of.
Sure.
And Richard Harris, any sort of Jimmy Webb stuff.
Do I dare? Okay, now let's do the Richard Harris thing, because we can. We, you know, the choices we have there. I do The Yard Went On Forever, or I do the song. So.
Well,
or I dig out that old album and play one of the obscure cuts that no one's ever heard.
Well, Name of My Sorrow, I think, from A Tramp Shining. I think it's track 3. so that would be a good one to have. Some of The Fall, I think. Probably Edinburgh Man. Let's have Edinburgh Man from Shiftwork, I think. I'm a really big fan of Skylarkin, so anything from that, maybe Another Satellite, Harper's Bazaar, Anything Goes, which has always been our kind of philosophy.
On that Green
music.
Warner Brothers label, I have it.
Yep. How many more?
Oh, keep going.
I could go on. From nowadays, I'm a big fan of Aberfeldy. I really like their stuff, so if you've got anything from them, another Edinburgh connection there. Sticking with Scotland, I'd need to have some orange juice, so sticking with the food theme. Some of The Jam, who were the first band I went to see, and have always been my first musical influence, so I really like All Mod Cons and Sound Effects, so anything from those two. But not one of the Bruce Foxton songs, please. And like I said, that country music thing was always really big. When I grew up, my mum and dad were massive Elvis fans, and one of the first things I remember was was him kind of dying and my mum being really upset and digging out these records that were upsetting my mum so much, so finding out what it was all about. So, but funnily enough, it's not really like his classic era that I'm, you know what it's like when you're young, you're really attached to what you hear at the time. And it's kind of what's seen now is this kind of gross era that appeals to my ears. Because there's certain eras, I think, like for me it's say 79 to 81, where it doesn't really matter what the record is and what type of record is or how cool the record is. I do actually enjoy hearing it, you know, whether it's, even if I know it's a terrible, terrible song, it just, something hits me.
Oh, yes, I have a collection of those.
Yeah, well.
The songs we grew up with. So give me a couple of those. Give me the couple that people will just be like, oh my God, they're playing that on the radio.
Well, I really liked, this is where they get kind of pretty kind of embarrassing probably. I really like Never Let Us Slip Away by Andrew Gold. I don't know if you know that.
Sure.
And I really like, from that, I like Message in a Bottle. I've got a soft spot for Stuart Copeland's drumming. But the early sort of 70s stuff, like early Elvis stuff from the White Suit era, Suspicious Minds and Burning Love and even Way Down, you know, all that stuff's really good. So a bit of that.
Well, thank you so much. This has been really fun.